speak this morning, and I guess first it's going to be Eric.
Hi, everybody. I'm Aaron. I'm an addict. First of all, thanks for having me here. It's a real honor. My head tells me that I have to, like, come up with some really cool stuff, inspiring, motivational, and powerful, maybe even humorous. But what I've learned in being around in these rooms for some time is that if I just share from my heart, if I just share from what my experiences that I have had, and that maybe somebody out there will relate to it, maybe they'll have had a similar experience. And so when I do share, I try to just do that. I mean, I'm a little nervous because this is my first time ever doing this. And so I was at 4 o'clock this morning. I was running over things in my head I wanted to say, but it doesn't really matter because that's not what this is all about. And so I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about my story, and then I'm going to tell you how I walk the walk in this program and in life around the earth people and the other people who are not addicts or maybe who are addicts who need a program who just haven't figured it out. So, you know, that's this. Hopefully somebody will get something out of this. So basically, I grew up in suburban Maryland. I had two parents who loved each other. They probably shouldn't have had kids because the kids were secondary to their relationship. And I always felt, I mean, I had some personal experiences, you know, the loss of grandparents that kind of stopped talking to the family. And, you know, over the years of doing step work and digging deep into my coconut, I've learned some things about maybe what caused me to start to need to do something differently, to feel differently. So that's the reason I'm sharing that with you guys. I had a couple personal losses and some weird experiences as a kid, but for the most part, fairly average suburban lifestyle. I always felt a little different. I was a very sensitive kid. My folks never really, like, my dad was very sarcastic, and so it was very rare that he would ever, you know, not make a joke or not be sarcastic. And I find myself doing the same thing with my kids. And I hate it, you know, because I don't want to be a smart ass all the time. I really want to just try to be there for them and open and real. But it's, you know, it's as my uncle says, it's my pickling, you know, so it's the world I grew up in. So just like most average kids, I started using drugs when I was 15 with some friends. I had older friends. I always seemed like I was attracted to older people and, you know, partying on the weekends, very mildly, nothing really, really heavy. Because I think sometimes I want to believe that, you know, this thing just came on like a tidal wave, but it didn't. It really was progressive. It really did take a gradual stepping up over my years of using. And so I just got introduced to a little drinking, a little smoking, and that was kind of how it went. And then I went to a junior college for a couple years, and then I got to go to this school in Boston when I was 19, and that was my first year really. I mean, I'd been away from home before for long periods of time, because my whole thing is I always wanted to try to escape. Everything in my life, even at a young age, was trying to escape. I moved to a foreign country for a year when I was in high school just because I couldn't deal with whatever was inside me. But I didn't know enough at 15 to know that I was trying to escape from myself. I wasn't trying to escape from everything else. I couldn't get away from myself. It's an amazing thing. So I basically went to school, and that seemed to be the year that, for whatever reason, I have no conscious thought about how it started, but I started using pretty much every day from 19, and it didn't stop till I was 33. So every waking moment of my life, from 19 to 33, I was high in some form. Other than sleeping, I was when I was awake, I was getting high. And I graduated college. I came back to went to the University of Maryland and graduated, and I met my wife there, and I told her that, you know, we got married, and I said, and she said, you know, we partied in college and everything was cool, but that was college and that's what you're supposed to do. And somewhere into the first year of marriage, she's like, you quit, right? And I was like, oh yeah, I quit, you know, I'm not doing that anymore, you know. And I promised her that I wasn't going to do it anymore, but you know, that was never in the table or in the cards for me. I mean, my God, the thought of not getting high or feeling high. And the crazy thing was, I was aspiring to be a professional musician, and so the lifestyle that I had from 21 to 33 was pretty conducive to. I was playing nightclubs. I was in an environment where there were obviously drugs and alcohol, but my band actually started to pick up a little notoriety, a little fame, and you know, the better venues you play and the more fans you pick up, the better the drugs are and the more frequent the drugs are. So, you know, I mean, I could tell you, like, my singer and I, we would ride from one place to the other, and the van would just be filled with smoke. I mean, we weren't even breathing oxygen after a while. There was so much smoking going on and partying because we were bored, you know, for one. But also, I was building my addiction. I was slowly progressing into my, you know, even though I was using every day, I did not think I had a problem. I didn't think there was any issues at all. I kind of had a job and was working, and I was paying bills, and we lived in a house, and I thought I was a responsible member of society. So what the heck, you know, there was really no reason to think that I had a problem. And so somewhere, I guess, you know, into the music career, I was working and doing the music career, and then at some point, I guess in the early 90s, I decided to just make a go of it, and I was in this band that was very successful, and we decided just, this is it, this is what we're going to do for the rest of our lives. And we got on the road, and we traveled, and we had a decent amount of success. And you know, but the whole time, I'm living this lifestyle that's perfectly suited for a drug addict. Because, you know, who's going to give a musician a hard time because he's getting high or he's drinking? You know, it just fit. And the whole time, you know, my wife, you know, so I know she knows, you know, now I know she knew the whole time. But the whole time, I thought I had her fooled, you know. I was laughing with my friends the other night. You know, I had vials of Visine probably in every corner of every place that I knew, and you know, in breath mints. And I always thought I was fooling her and stuff. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I didn't really even care. You know, that was the craziest part about my whole addiction, is that I thought I was a decent, caring person, loving person, but I really wasn't. I didn't have to love anybody. I was using drugs to cover up my feelings. I was using drugs I felt so, you know, gross inside most of the time, and the only thing I could do was covered up by being stoned. And the saddest part about it was, I learned later that was really just, you know, a way to cover up all this stuff, because at the time I just thought I was having a good time, you know, and I was doing what I was supposed to do. But you know, after I started, you know, getting in this program, which I will, you know, eventually get to in the story, that I started to learn some stuff about myself, and I realized that, you know, that there was no amount of drugs that was ever going to stop me from feeling the way I was feeling. And, you know, I think, you know, towards the end, and I'll share that with you, you know, towards the end, you know, it was like a lid on a boiling pot, you know. You couldn't put enough drugs in me to get those feelings to go away, to get that tension to go away, to get that stress to go away. And, you know, so my life progressed. I got my first arrest somewhere, you know, one day coming home from a club, you know, my friend had given me this little nugget, you know, it seemed microscopic to me, you know. But 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, Montgomery County's finest pulled me over, and they're like, and, you know, I had never been arrested before, so I didn't even know that you don't just offer stuff up. So they bluffed me out, you know. They were like, all right, we're going to search your car. I was like, good, because I hadn't actually smoked anything and I hadn't done anything yet. I was going to take it home and do it. And so the cop said, okay, well, now we're going to search your person. You know, do you have anything? And I'm like, oh, this little teeny nugget, you know. And what was funny about it, he's like, you know, turn around, and they put the cuffs on me. And I was like, you're going to arrest me for that? I was so blown away. Because I knew drugs were illegal, but I thought there was like levels and quantities. I mean, I wasn't packing kilos in my van, you know. So I get arrested, and it's funny because I'm at this point, I'm a musician with a little bit of notoriety locally in the Washington metro area, and you know, nobody's ever recognized me before, and they take me to Seven Locks, and I'm chained to a desk, and there's this girl that's chained to the desk next to me, and she's like, I know you from somewhere. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is where I'm going to get known? You know, I'm sitting here locked up in Montrose Road, you know, lockup. And this is where, I know, I'm waiting for somebody to recognize me as a famous musician because my ego needs it. And in jail, that's where somebody recognized me. And then the arresting police officer said, wait a minute, do you play in a band? I was like, it was my nightmare. So I spent the night in jail. I got out the next morning, and I come home, and I hadn't been home all night, obviously. So I walk in, and I told my wife what's going on. And so, you know, at this point, she is all along. What's cool is that we weren't at the beginning of all this. We were separating. We were drifting apart. But you know, the story has a happy ending. I'll get to that in a minute. But we, you know, I never thought about her. And now I have a son, you know, and I'm trying to be a father, but I'm high all the time, and I can't focus on anything. I'm not really working. She's working in the day, and I'm gigging at night, and I'm taking care of the kid in the day, but I'm not really taking care of the kid. So anyway, some more time passes, and you know, I get arrested for the second time. And the first time I got arrested, you know, it was like, oh, 24 hours community service. I did it at a band gig or something and tied it all in. And it didn't feel like the punishment fit the crime. So I didn't really feel like I did anything wrong. And therefore, it never really conveyed to me that I was an addict or that I had a problem. Like normal people get arrested, right? And normal people do crazy stuff all the time. I just got caught. So the second time was a little more different. I was somewhere in 96. My dad was killed tragically. He was hit by a van helping somebody at a car accident, and it devastated my world because he was one of my best friends, and he was 55, and I was at this point I was deep in the throes of my daily using, you know. But I think that really pushed me over the edge, and my wife and I lost a baby in between, like 3 weeks before my dad got killed. So that to me was the year, was the moment when I didn't care about anything in life. I didn't care where I was going. I didn't care what happened to me. I wanted to die. And so I was going to my buddy's bachelor party. I luckily had picked up the cocaine earlier, and that was already in my house, but I was picking up an ounce of pot to bring to the bachelor party because we're going to have a good time, you know. And you know, I'm smoking a bowl in Silver Spring, and I pull this U-turn in the middle of the street. I wasn't even really doing anything that bad. The cop pulls me over, and you know, I pull down the window and blow smoke in his face. I mean, at this point, I really didn't care what happened to me, you know. And he was laughing because he's like, you know why I pulled you over? I was like, well, the pot in the car. He's like, no, you pulled a U-turn in the middle of the street. I was like, well, that's my luck. So they cuffed me and they took me for the second time to Seven Locks. And I luckily got out of there, like, you know, after a couple hours. And my brother picked me up. And the first thing I said, let's go to the bachelor party, you know, and let's go party, you know. And he's like, are you kidding? I just pulled you out of Seven Locks. I said, so? You know, I didn't care. You know, and so the second time I got arrested, somewhere between, you know, that period of time and the other period of time, my wife had decided that she figured out she could raise the kids on her own. So when I got home that next day, she was like, you can't live here anymore. So I was like, okay, where am I going to go? I don't know what to do. She's like, I don't care. You're not staying here. So I got my little bag or whatever, and I moved out. And I was going to go to the house where I was using, because basically at that point I was just sitting. At that point in those years of that deep depression and sadness, I basically was in my friend's house getting high all day long. The only time I left was to pick up more drugs, and I was watching like two or three movies on HBO, and I was just deep, deep, deep in it. You know, I was deep in it. And so part of me was upset for a millisecond, but I couldn't really fathom what was going on. So, but the second arrest put me in this program they have in Montgomery County called IPSA. And that required me to do urinalysis twice a week, go to some NA meetings, and basically get me on the straight and narrow. Now, what I didn't tell you guys is that the last 3 years, those miserable 3 years that I was using every day, and it was horrible, every day I would look in the mirror when I put the pipe up to my mouth, and said, tomorrow you're going to stop. And guess what? Tomorrow came, I didn't stop. And I said the next day, tomorrow you're going to stop. I couldn't stop. But I never felt like I was an addict. I never felt like there was anything wrong with this. You know, that was my problem. I could never put the connection together. So anyways, this IPSA program said, okay, for at least for the next 4 months, you're going to stop. And I had to stop because that was taking urinalysis, and I didn't want to go to jail. They were like, you will do jail time this time. This is your second arrest, whatever. So I was like, eh, I don't really want to go to prison, so I'm cool with this. I'll deal with it. And I did my time, and I started, and now they told me only to go to 2 NA meetings a week, so I did, because I did everything they told me to do. And I would go to this one, you know, candlelight meeting in Montgomery County, and it was a 1-2-3-step meeting. And I would sit in the back, and I would look at all these people, and I'd be like, are you kidding me? I don't belong here. I don't know. And these people, they're crazy. This is insane. And I had my own vision of what I thought drug addicts were, and I was quite surprised to find out that some of them were just like me. Go figure, right? And I sat there, closed-minded, closed-arm, got my slip signed. I didn't care. And I did that for the whole 4 months. And then somewhere along the line, I was I was still pissed in positive tests because I had a lot of THC in my system. And almost 12 weeks later, and they were going to throw me out. They were going to get me in trouble. And I went to my doctor and I got a test done, showed the THC levels were dropping, and I was like, you see? And for the first time in my life, I was fighting for my recovery. And I walked out of that building, and I, for the first time, somewhere in my brain, because I've been going to these meetings, right? Somewhere in my brain, I said to my higher power, go figure, you know and I know I'm not using. Who cares what they think? And I couldn't believe it. I was like, where did that come from? So somewhere as I was detoxing and going to these meetings, stuff was, osmosis creeping into my brain somehow. Because when I first came here, all these readings we just read, they were just like blah, 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 blah. I didn't understand. I'm like, what are you all talking about? But that's the beauty of this program. You know, if you stick around long enough, if you start to work this program, you will start to hear things, and then you might even hear powerful things, and then you might get values and principles that will eventually save your life when you're starting to think about, hey, I'm not an addict, I can go back out and use again. So I creeped into this program, and I didn't even know. So after 4 months, I didn't know if I was going to stay, and I saw this guy's lead one night, and I guess I had had enough clean time, and my ears were open, my brain was open, my heart was open, and it was funny because, he led this meeting, and I saw the heavens open up, and the light shined out on this dude, and I said, well, I guess, if I'm going to be, because I'm 100% of everything, bad, good, whatever. I said, if I'm going to stay, because I decided at that 4 months when I was free from IFSA that I was going to stay, because it seemed to be working, I was clean, that I got to get in the middle of this program. So somebody said, well, you got to get a sponsor. So I saw this guy. He looked like an angel. I said, could we be my sponsor? He said, sure. He goes, we're going up to the mountains in West Virginia this weekend with a whole bunch of men. We're going to bang on drums. We're going to talk about how much we love each other. We're going to eat food. We're going to have a great time. And I'm thinking, there is no way I'm doing this. No, this is creepy and weird. I was thinking Deliverance, the whole nine yards. But the most important part about that was, to me, that was the turning point for me in recovery. That's when I started to walk my walk of recovery. Because, I'd been walking my walk of using all the way up to that part. But I went up to this place, and I had the best time ever. I was still separated from my wife at this point. I called her up, and I said, hey, they're doing this thing up in the mountains. And she said, you go. Go do it. She wanted me to recover so badly because she was hoping she was going to either divorce me or I was going to get myself together and life was going to move on. Because by now we have two kids and she's taking care of everything and doing it, and she's an amazing, strong person, and I didn't learn that till the second half of my marriage. But I went up to the mountains with these guys, and that was it for me. I was like, I'm getting so in the middle of this program. I'm doing everything they suggested. And I was only clean about 4 or 5 months at that point. So, but I realized that something magical and spiritual was happening. I met guys who are still my best friends today from that place. A couple of them are with me today, and we're hanging out. We were sharing some laughs about the whole thing. And that sponsor that I picked, we started doing the first step, and he had an argument with me, and I fired him like the next day. So I moved on. I wasn't really ready to. I was ready to do steps. I just wasn't ready to hang with him. And he's a great guy. We're still friends. But it took me a couple sponsors to get to the place where I could actually get comfortable and start working steps. But the one thing I know about this program, and it's a program of recovery. And it's a program of 12 steps, and I share this often. For me, I first and foremost come to this program for one reason: to keep my head from spinning out of control, to find serenity in my life, which is a very big battle. I've been drug free for almost 15 years now, and But I struggle with everything else mental. Okay, I struggle with everything mental. I overthink everything. I do a lot of thinking. I'm a deep thinker and an overthinker. And so the problem with this, that's if I was just looking to get rid of the desire to use, that went away somewhere in the first or second year. So why do I stay? Why do I hang around here? Well, they actually suggested me get a sponsor. They suggested me to get the 12 steps going, which I have. The first four steps I did one each year because I just really felt like I had to get really deep into these steps, I was talking to people in some rehabs, and like, I did all 12 steps in 30 days. I was like, how the heck can you do that? I couldn't, in my first 4 months, I couldn't even think, and so I really needed to work those steps, and I did, and once I got through step four, my God, the world opened up for me. I was in recovery finally. I got rid of all the past garbage, and I started living my life. And that was amazing. And every time I've ever sponsored anybody, when we get stuck on step four, I say, just go through that door. I promise you. You don't have to. Just trust me for one thing. Go through that door. And you will never, ever look back again. Because I think that's where I see that's where a lot of people get stuck, and they never can get to the recovery side of things. So the other thing they told me to do, which I think is one of the most important things, is do some service work. I have had a service position ever since I've been clean. And I sometimes take on the crazy I've taken on the crazy task of being an area service every year of my clean time, and I've done every position there. And it tests me in a lot of ways, because there's certainly a lot of personalities there. In our area, they call it area circus. I don't know if that's a known thing, but it is. It's a bit of a circus, but it really challenged me in my recovery to not, you know, the whole principles before personalities thing. I really wanted to see if that worked, and that's a good place to test it. You know, I'm on committees, I'm working with people, strong personalities, whatever. So that's one of the ways I walk the walk in recovery, is I put myself in the middle of this. I have a very high threshold of pain. I always have. You know, I had to take a cold shower today to come over here, and I dealt with it. And, you know, I think that's never been my problem. Pain is something I welcome. I relish in. It's probably one of my drugs too, unfortunately. And when I'm not using it, and I'm not squishing that pain down, it's all out there, all over the place. I mean, my friends, they make fun of me because I'm a twitchy, nervous wreck. Like today when I was coming up here, I was just twitching, you know. They don't go, oh, you'll be okay. I mean, they do, but they love to, you know, push on it a little bit. Which I do respect and appreciate, because they treat me like I'm supposed to be treated, like a human being that, you know, like them, and they care about me, and that's how they show that they care about me. You know, if they were all tippy-toe and standoffish, I would be probably more suspicious, you know. So I think, you know, for me, I have to be a living example to not just NA, because that's important, but the other thing I was going to tell you guys about before I wrap this up is that, you know, I'm out in the world. I'm an IT person at a law firm, and you want to test your mental strength, go work in a law firm, people, because the egos, the arrogance, the attitudes, if anybody has experience working at law firms, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm a customer support person because I do IT, right? So I have to take care of the lawyers when they call and scream, my computer's not working, my program's not working. And every day I have to test myself from either not cussing them out, beating them to death, because those are where the thoughts go. The thoughts are all about violence and aggression and anger and exploding everywhere. And I think that's one of my biggest things. I have to really work on that, because I do see myself as an angry, violent person. And I thought drugs kept me from being angry and violent. And I do like I said, I like pain, and I used to like to fight. And this program has taught me that I don't need to do it in that way. If I fight inside my head, it's probably not good for me mentally, but it's a safer place. I tend to get into less trouble if I fight inside my head. But what I also learned is if I sit on it for a little bit, or I talk to somebody, maybe they'll say, hey, Aaron, maybe, you know, firebombing your law firm is not a good idea. Maybe you should just hang loose for a couple minutes and you know, not go to jail. But I don't always see it that way, you know. And I think that's what's important. It's not just, I mean, when I'm here in my NA family, I'm comfortable. I get it. You all get me. I get you. We all may have slightly different experiences, but I definitely know you know what I know, and vice versa. You know how I feel. You know, and I think that's cool. That's probably my most comfortable spot. But when I'm out there with the rest of those earth people, man, I get tweaked. I get really tweaked. And it's not like road rage on the beltway. That doesn't do it for me. It's somebody saying something to me in a way that looks condescending or diminishing. And they might not even be saying it that way. I just perceive it that way. And that's my biggest problem. And then I am off to the races, you know. And I got scenarios, and I'm building bombs, and I'm ready to kill everybody. It's insane. It really is. But that's why I stay in this program, because it's gotten better over the time. It's gotten better. It's not as bad. And I managed to have a job for ever since I got in the program. I was not employable before I got in the program, but I am, and I have been now. And I've gone through tons of layoffs and job losses and stuff and painful stuff, and I haven't seen fit to pick up a drug over that, you know. And I always share my best days using do not even compare to my worst days being clean. I love being clean. I love recovery. I don't always love every situation I get myself into, but I do love recovery. And you know, the one thing I'll share with, and then I'll shut up, is I had no self-esteem when I came to this program, and I always share this because I like it. It's like now I carry a little thimble's worth of self-esteem. and I carry it, and it's always shaking, and it's always being threatened to be dropped out of the thimble. And, you know, I'm working up to a shot glass or maybe something a little bit bigger, because I need it. I need it. Because when I lose that part of me, all bets are off. I can't function. I can't think. I don't act properly. And the person who gets it, so anyways, my wife let me back in the house after 6 months, and she's the one, and my kids, they catch the most because they're around me. And I'm amazed that she puts up with me because I am truly crazy. But, you know, she took me back, and in the 15 years I've been clean, we've had lots of conversations because, see, I never saw what she went through. I couldn't until I was clean and recovered enough to really be empathetic to another person, to really understand her story. And we'll go on these walks, and she'll share stuff with me, and I'm just blown away, you know, like what she was thinking and what she was going through, you know. And that really helps me, too, and makes me want to be a better person. I'm cool. All right, well, that's it for me, guys. Thanks for letting me share.